From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell with another hour of old-time radio. Getting the hour underway with an episode of the quiz program Dr. IQ. This broadcast first aired on NBC July 17th, 1939.
We take you now to the stage of the Chicago Theater in Chicago, where Mars Incorporated, makers of Milky Way candy, present Dr. IQ, the Mental Thinker.
Presenting Dr. IQ. Mars Incorporated, makers of Milky Way, America's most enjoyable candy bar, bring you 30 minutes of fun with your genial master of wit and information, Dr. IQ, the Mental Banker. We hope you will enjoy this program tonight. And we know you will always enjoy the taste of a Milky Way. Have you discovered yet how cooling and enjoyable a Milky Way is when it has just been freshly chilled in the refrigerator? You'll be surprised what a delightful experience it is in the middle of a hot summer day to open the refrigerator and take out a chilled Milky Way. With the first bite, the crisp milk chocolate coating, the layer of smooth, creamy caramel, and the chilled center of chocolate nougat, flavored with real malted milk, blend into that cool, delightful taste you will find only in a Milky Way. And what's more, you will find every bite just as enjoyable, right down to the last delightful taste that lingers in your mouth. When you crave good candy, eat a Milky Way. And now here is that wise man with a friendly smile, that man with tonight's questions and cash for your correct answers, Dr. IQ.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. My assistants with portable microphones are scattered throughout the audience. Now, those in the theater who volunteer to answer questions are handed a portable microphone and remain in their seats while answering my questions. Allow me first to introduce my assistants. Donald Dowd on my right downstairs.
Thank you, Doctor.
Gene Rouse in the center aisle.
Thank you, Doctor.
Lynn Brandt on my left downstairs.
Thank you, Doctor.
Norm Barry on my right upstairs.
Thank you, Doctor.
And Bob Brown on my left upstairs.
Thank you, Doctor.
All right, Donald Dowd, our first contestant of the evening, please.
I have a lady here, Doctor.
$6 for the correct answer to this one. The former capital of China was named Peking. Now, Peking is a name not used anymore. By what name is this city now known? No coaching, please. 10 seconds.
I'm sorry, Doctor. I don't know.
Peking. However, give that lady a box of 24 bars of chocolate Milky Way and 2 kit tickets to next week's production here at the Chicago Theater, Daughters Courageous. Gene Rouse in the center aisle.
Yes, Doctor. I have a gentleman here.
$7 for this one, sir. Mexico, our nearest neighbor to the south, touches 3 of our states besides Texas. $7 if you name all 3. No coaching, Dawson.
California.
California's 1.
New Mexico.
That's 2. Go right ahead now. You have it on the tip of your tongue, just like a Milky Way. 10 seconds, sir. I'm sorry, it's Arizona. However, give that gentleman a box of chocolate Milky Ways and 2 tickets to next week's production here at the Chicago Theater. Lynn Brandt, please.
I have a lady here, Doctor.
$11 for this one, please. If you have looked closely at the coat of arms of the United States, you will have noticed in the talons of the eagle on one side an olive branch, and on the other a bunch of arrows. Now, just what do the arrows and the olive branch signify?
The olive branch signifies peace.
That's correct. And the arrows?
The arrows should signify war.
That is absolutely worth 11 silver dollars to that lady.
May I have your name and address, please?
Annetta Ruby, 3351 Balmoral.
Thank
Here's
you.
Here's $11.
Congratulations, is our first one of the evening. All right, Norm Berry.
Yes, Doctor. I have a gentleman here.
I wonder if this gentleman could tell me, and now $21 for this one, sir. In regard to clothing, what is the difference between a doublet and a singlet?
Well, a doublet is a garment.
What type would you say, sir?
With a belt.
You mean a coat, in other words. I think you have it correctly. Is that right, sir? And how about that singlet? A singlet. A doublet is a close-fitting jacket. We'll give you the benefit on that one. And a singlet.
Well, I'm afraid I can't answer that.
A singlet is an undershirt or a jersey. However, give that gentleman two tickets to next week's production, Daughters Courageous, here at the Chicago Theater, in a box of Milky Ways. Bob Brown.
I have a lady here, Doctor.
I wonder if this lady could tell me for $7 silver and no coaching, please, would you read, eat, ride, or sing a brochure? Would you read, eat, ride, or sing a brochure?
You would sing.
I beg your pardon?
Sing.
I'm sorry, you'd read it. You see, it's a pamphlet or a catalog. However, give the lady a box of chocolate Milky Ways and two tickets to next week's production here at the Chicago Theater. Donald Dowd.
I have a gentleman here, Doctor.
$6 for this one, sir, in 10 seconds. If Philadelphia is not the capital of Pennsylvania, then what is the capital?
Harrisburg.
$6 to that gentleman. There we are.
Raymond A. Clamp, 61 East Oak Street.
Thank you, sir, and congratulations. All right, Gene Rouse.
Yes, Doctor, I have a lady.
I wonder if this lady could describe for $5 silver the color of a bay, B-A-Y, horse, a bay horse.
Light tan.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's reddish brown. However, give the lady a box of chocolate Milky Ways and two tickets to next week's production here at the Chicago Theater. Lynn Brandt.
And here is a gentleman, Doctor.
I am going to describe, sir, a well-known personality a few clues at a time. If you identify him correctly after the first clue is given, you will receive $25. The longer it takes you to identify him, the less your reward. Do you understand, sir?
Yes, I do.
Number one, $25. He was born December 30th, 1873, at 174 South Street on the waterfront in New York City.
Alfred Smith.
Alfred Smith is correct.
May I have your name and address?
Edward Schultheis, 4100 Keystone Avenue.
Thank you, sir, and congratulations. You are the second in our series to take our biographical on the first clue. All right, Norm Berry, please.
Yes, Doctor, I have a lady here.
$23 for this one, please. Howland, Baker, Jarvis have what in common? No coaching now, please.
Would you please repeat?
Yes, I'll be very happy to. Howland, Baker, and Jarvis have what in common? Now, go ahead.
I'm afraid I don't know.
Oh, they're all islands claimed by the United States by reason of discovery during the last century. Give the lady two tickets to next week's production here at the Chicago Theater, Daughters Courageous, and a box of Milky Ways. Bob Brown.
I have a gentleman here, Doctor.
$7 for this one, sir, in 5 seconds. In what harbor did the sinking of the Maine take place? No coaching now.
Havana,
Cuba, $7 to that gentleman. Here we go.
Your name and address, please.
Jesse Gibbons, Rockford, Illinois.
Thank you, sir, and we're glad to have you with us this evening. All right, Donald Dowd.
I have a lady here, Doctor.
I wonder if this lady could tell me for $12, how would a woman, a civilian, and a soldier salute the flag when it is passing in a parade?
A woman, a soldier, and a what?
And a civilian.
A woman would just stand and salute the flag with her hand.
And just how would she salute the flag, please? Now, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm afraid I don't know.
Well, you see, I'm sorry, too. You see, a woman places the right hand over the heart.
Oh.
A man removes his hat with the right hand and holds it over his heart, and a soldier gives the hand salute. But to that lady, two tickets to next week's production and a box of chocolate Milky Ways. Gene Rouse, please.
Yes, doctor, I have a gentleman here.
$5 for this one, sir. 5 seconds. What was the name of the person who took a lighted lantern and made a diligent search for an honest man?
Aladdin?
That's all right, sir. It was Diogenes. I'm sorry. Give the gentleman a box of chocolate Milky Ways and 2 tickets to next week's production here at the Chicago Theater. Len Brandt on my left downstairs.
I have a lady here, doctor.
$6 for this one, please. Now, how would you correctly pronounce N-A-P-H-T-H-A?
Naphtha.
How's that?
Naphtha.
Well, spell it like you'd pronounce it now for me.
N-A-F-T-H-A.
Naphtha is right. I'll tell you. I'll make that $5 for Naphtha. You already have $5 now. Now, I've spelled it for you correctly. You spell it for me for another $3. Correctly. You pronounced it correctly. Spell it correctly.
N-A-P-H-T-H-A.
Give that lady $8. Here we go.
Can I have your name and address, please?
Mrs. E.W. Mitchell, 1220 North State Parkway.
Thank you and congratulations. All right, Norm Barry.
Yes, doctor. I have a gentleman here.
Well, here again is that individual portion of our Dr. IQ broadcast, The Thought Twister. Tonight, I'm going to say this sentence twice, but mind you, you must repeat it exactly as I say it if you wish to receive this $25. Are you ready, sir?
Yes.
Now, wait till I repeat it twice. Here we go. Did that phone ring? Asked Ted of Bing. No, the phone is dead, Ted, to him said Bing. Number 2. Did that phone ring? Asked Ted of Bing. No, the phone is dead, Ted, to him said Bing.
If that phone ring, said Bing. Oh, I missed.
I'm sorry, you want to make another start at it?
I'm sorry, I missed.
All right, did that phone ring? Asked Ted of Bing. No, the phone is dead, Ted, to him said Bing. However, give that gentleman a box of chocolate Milky Ways and 2 tickets to next week's production here at the Chicago Theater. Bob Brown, please.
I have a lady here, doctor.
$7 for this one. If Robert Louis Stevenson wrote Treasure Island and Jim Hawkins was the hero, then who in the book told the tale? Shall I repeat it?
Stevenson?
If Robert Louis Stevenson wrote Treasure Island and Jim Hawkins was the hero, then who in the book told the tale?
Jim Hawkins.
Jim Hawkins is worth $7 to you, madam.
Congratulations. Ed, your name and address, please.
Florence Brandwing, 201 West Fargo.
Thank you very much. Now we come to the right and wrong portion of our program, in which those here in the theater will mark yes or no on their tally cards in answer to the right and wrong statements sent in by the radio audience. We are happy to announce that last week here in the Chicago Theater, one person marked his tally card correctly. And as our mastermind award was $200, he will receive a check in this amount. This winner was Mr. Donald B. Sherwood, 457 Belmont Avenue, Chicago, Illinois. Congratulations. You may indeed be proud, sir, of the fact that out of the thousands here in the theater, you were the only one who marked your tally card correctly. Our mastermind award tonight is again $100. In the event there are no winners in the theater tonight, our next week's award will be $200. Now, we know you in the radio audience are interested in hearing the correct answers to our 12 statements last week in order that you may check your own IQ. Here are last week's answers. Number 1, a howitzer is a gun and not a sudden hurricane at sea. Number 2, a leatherback is a sea turtle and not a United States Marine. Number 3, haricot is a meat and vegetable stew. It really is. Number 4, the shaddock is a citrus fruit and not a fish. Number 5, a Portuguese man of war is a fish and not a South American bird. Number 6, a mnemonic device is a device designed to aid the memory. Number 7, the gridiron is a contrivance used when repairing the hulls of ships. Number 8, an aneroid barometer is not used to measure the humidity of the air as it is used to measure the air pressure. Number 9, we pledge our fortunes and our sacred honor is part of the last line of the Declaration of Independence and not the oath taken by the Three Musketeers. Number 10, Hollywood, California does not have 7 different railway terminals. Number 11, the elver is a young eel and not a carpenter's tool. Number 12, passenger pigeons are not used by the United States Signal Corps. In fact, they are now extinct. Now, since you in the radio audience do not have an opportunity to win by answering the right and wrong questions, allow me to present Alan Anthony, who will tell you how you can win $50 to $150.
Here is how you radio listeners may win the $50 to $150 by furnishing the right and wrong statements to be used here in the theater next Monday night. The judges each week select 3 sets of 4 statements each and award $50 for each 4 statements they select. Consequently, if 2 of your sets are selected, you win $100. And if 3 sets are selected, you win $150. Now, if you would like to participate, here are the rules. First, send in on 1 sheet of paper 4 statements which can be answered yes or no. Accompany each statement with the answer. Second, put exactly 4 statements on the page, no more, no less, as the statements will only be selected in sets of 4. Third, accompany each set with a printed Milky Way wrapper and send them to Dr. IQ, Chicago, Illinois. Now, you may send in as many entries as you wish, as long as you accompany each entry with a Milky Way wrapper. All entries must be postmarked not later than Thursday midnight, July 20th, to be used next Monday night. All entries become the property of Mars Incorporated, and the decision of the judges will be final. This contest is open to everyone, except employees of Mars Incorporated and their advertising agency. The winners will be announced next Monday night, and your checks will be mailed by that time. Now, Dr. IQ.
The 3 sets selected for tonight by the judges were submitted by J.D. McNair, Wernsboro, Georgia, Helen Stone, 1837 Greenleaf Avenue, Chicago, Illinois, Mrs. Carmen de Blasio, 971 Broadway, West Somerville, Massachusetts. Congratulations. Your checks in the amount of $50 each have been mailed to you by the makers of Milky Way. And here are the 12 right and wrong statements chosen for tonight. I shall repeat each statement. Number 1. An average standard bushel of corn weighs 62 pounds in all states. An average standard bushel of corn weighs 62 pounds in all states. Number 2. The United States has issued $50 gold pieces. The United States has issued $50 gold pieces. Number 3, a township usually has 60 square miles. A township usually has 60 square miles. Number 4, helium is found only in the United States and Canada. Helium is found only in the United States and Canada. Number 5, Puerto Rico is ruled by a governor appointed by the president. Puerto Rico is ruled by a governor appointed by the president. Number 6, the Jay Treaty ended the War of 1812. The capital J-A-Y, Jay Treaty, ended the War of 1812. Number 7, Oberramagu is in Peru. Oberramagu, capital O-B-E-R-A-M-M-E-R-G-A-U, Oberramagu is in Peru. Number 8, the Bureau of Indian Affairs is under the Secretary of War. The Bureau of Indian Affairs is under the Secretary of War. Number 9, the seeds of the opium poppy are poisonous. The seeds of the opium poppy are poisonous. Number 10, the Cuban trocha, T-R-O-C-H-A, is a weapon of highly tempered steel. The Cuban trocha is a weapon of highly tempered steel. Number 11, at the present time, 2 republics have presidents who were born in the United States. At the present time, 2 republics have presidents who were born in the United States. Number 12, at the beginning of the war between the states, no Union officer held the rank of general. At the beginning of the war between the states, no Union officer held the rank of general. Now, ladies and gentlemen, kindly pass your tally cards toward the center aisles in order that we may get on with the regular portion of our program as rapidly as possible. Just another reminder to you radio listeners. Send in your sets of four statements each before Thursday midnight, accompanied with a chocolate Milky Way wrapper, addressed to Dr. IQ, Chicago, Illinois. And now Donald Dowd, please, on my right downstairs.
I have a gentleman here, Doctor.
$7, sir, for one correct answer to this two-part question. And $17 if you get both correctly. Number one, what is a baby elephant called?
Don't know that one, Doctor.
All right, here, you still have a chance at $7. What is a baby camel called?
Imagine it's called a camel.
I'm very sorry, sir. A baby elephant's called a calf. A baby camel is called a foal or a colt. Give the gentleman a box of chocolate Milky Ways and two tickets to next week's production here at the Chicago Theater, Daughters Courageous. Gene Rouse in the center aisle.
Yes, Doctor, I have a lady here.
$7 for this one, please, ma'am. Just what is a stereoscope used for? A stereoscope. Just what is it used for?
Well, I think it's to listen to the heart or...
I'm sorry. I believe you're thinking of a stethoscope. You see, a stereoscope is an optical instrument which blends two pictures into one image. In the years gone by, don't you remember? Many parlors used to have one. Remember now? Give the lady a box of chocolate Milky Ways and two tickets to next week's production here at the Chicago Theater. Len Brandt, please.
I have a gentleman here, Doctor.
$24 for this one, sir. The name of the royal family of England was changed by proclamation in 1917 to Windsor. Now, what was the name before the change, sir? 10 seconds. I'm sorry, sir. It was Saxe-Coburg-Gotha. Give the gentleman a box of chocolate Milky Ways and two tickets to next week's production here at the Chicago Theater. Norm Barry.
Yes, Doctor. I have a young lady here.
$11 for this one, and it's of current interest. I wonder if she could tell me who is the secretary of the Communist Party in Russia.
Stalin.
$11 to that young lady.
Congratulations.
Ruth Gustafson, 4440 Drexel.
Thank you. That's quite interesting. Many people think of him as the president. All right, Bob Brown.
I have a gentleman here, Doctor.
$13 for this one, sir, in 10 seconds. If you were to climb, to reach the top of Mount Blanc, you would be on top of the highest peak of what mountain range?
The Sierra.
I'm sorry, sir. It would be the Alps. Give the gentleman two tickets to next week's production here at the Chicago Theater and a box of chocolate Milky Ways. All right, Donald Dowd.
Yes, Doctor, I have a lady here, sir.
$9 for this, I'll make it $11. Just for the fun of it, if you can tell me what the S in Ulysses S. Grant stands for. Ten seconds, please. I'm sorry, it would be Simpson. His full name was Ulysses Simpson Grant. Give the lady a box of chocolate Milky Ways and two tickets to next week's production here at the Chicago Theater. All right, Gene Rouse.
Yes, Doctor. I have a gentleman here.
I wonder if this gentleman could tell me for $11 the difference between a tangerine and a nectarine. No coaching now. Go right ahead, sir. A tangerine and a nectarine, $11.
I can't tell you.
Well, a tangerine's a small orange with an easily detached rind. In other words, it's from the citrus family. And a nectarine is a smooth-skinned variety of the peach. However, two tickets to that gentleman and a box of chocolate Milky Way. Lynn Brandt.
I have a lady here, Doctor.
I wonder if this lady could tell me for $7 of all the territories or states of the United States, which is the largest? No coaching, please. 5 seconds. The largest of our territories
Texas.
Or states. What's that?
Texas.
I'm sorry, it would be Alaska. 586,400 square miles, including the Aleutian Islands, more than twice the size of Texas. A box of chocolate Milky Ways and 2 tickets to next week's production to the lady. Norm Barry, please.
Yes, Doctor, I have a gentleman here.
$24 for this one, sir. What were the first two names of General Goethals, the man who directed the construction of the Panama Canal? The first two names.
George. I don't know the second.
Go ahead now, try. You have the first name.
Nah, I don't know that.
What would you say the initial was?
A.
I'm sorry, I was going to pay you if you had that initial right there. It was George Washington, sir. Give the gentleman a box of chocolate Milky Ways and 2 tickets to next week's production here at the Chicago Theater. Bob Brown.
I have a lady here, Doctor.
I wonder if this lady could tell me for $9. Sofia, S-O-F-I-A, or Sofia, is the capital of what country?
I don't know.
It would be Bulgaria. A box of chocolate Milky Ways and 2 tickets to next week's production to the lady. Donald Dowd, please.
I have a gentleman here, Doctor.
I wonder if this gentleman could tell me for $11 if candle light is the light from a candle, then just what kind of light is cannel, C-A-N-N-E-L, light?
Well, I don't know that one.
I'm sorry, sir. It'd be the light from cannel coal, a coal of fine texture making a very bright flame. You've probably used it from time to time. A box of chocolate Milky Ways and 2 tickets to next week's production here at the Chicago Theater to that gentleman. All right, Gene Rouse.
Yes, Doctor, I have a lady here.
$23 to this lady. If you saw a United States Army man with an insignia of a caduceus, C-A-D-U-C-E-U-S, to what branch of the Army would you know he belonged?
Medical.
$23 to that lady.
Thank you very much. Could we have your name and address, please?
Jane Spotswood, Rockford, Illinois.
Thank you and congratulations. All right, Lynn Brandt.
I have a gentleman here, Doctor.
I'll serve for $7 if a baseball pitcher can pitch almost as well left-handed as he can right-handed. Would you call him ambidextrous?
I certainly would.
Well, I don't believe I would. You see, ambidextrous means he must absolutely have equal skill with both hands. Not almost as good. However, 2 tickets to that gentleman of next week's production, Daughters Courageous, here at the Chicago Theater, and a box of chocolate Milky Ways. Now, ladies and gentlemen, for my part, I wish to sincerely thank you. And on behalf of our sponsor, Mars Incorporated, I present Alan C. Anthony.
We bring to a close another half hour with Dr. IQ, the mental banker. Remember to mail your 3 sets of right and wrong statements to Dr. IQ before midnight Thursday in order to be eligible for the awards of from $50 to $150 to be given next Monday night. Just address Dr. IQ, Chicago, Illinois. In the meantime, treat your family to the pleasure of having a box of Milky Ways on hand in the refrigerator. A box of Milky Ways doesn't cost very much, and the whole family will find it surprisingly convenient and enjoyable to always have Milky Ways on hand. You know, one pleasant thing about this good candy is that Milky Ways are as wholesome and nourishing as they are enjoyable. And so often throughout the day, you will be surprised to find how quickly a Milky Way that has just been chilled in the refrigerator will refresh you physically and revive your spirits pleasantly. With each bite, the cold, crisp milk chocolate coating, the layer of creamy caramel, and the chilled center of chocolate nougat, flavored with real malted milk, blend into that delightful taste you will find only in a Milky Way. Just taste it.
That's all we ask. The Dr. IQ program, sponsored by Mars Incorporated, makers of Milky Way, will be heard again next Monday from the stage of the Chicago Theater in Chicago at the same time and over these same stations through the National Broadcasting Company.
It's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the Radio Theater, our email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And our website, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. This is program number 1907. We'll conclude the hour with an early example of police drama on the radio, as we have an episode of Calling All Cars. This is program number 4 in the series, originally airing on CBS on December 20th of 1933. It's Human Bomb.
Calling All Cars, the copyrighted program created by the Rio Grande Oil Company.
San Diego police calling all cars, attention all cars, broadcast 7. Starting a holdup and murder on the National City Dyke. Bandits wearing tan coveralls, dark glasses, and driving a black Ford Roadster without a windshield. These men are armed, so be careful. That's all.
Hundreds of radio-equipped police cars prowling about your city every hour of the day and night. Would you risk your reputation by letting ordinary gasoline slacken the speed and cut down the power of your emergency cars? Or would you select the finest gasoline money could buy so your police cars could answer emergency calls at top speed so they could catch any criminal getaway car in a chase? Many of your brother police chiefs would advise you that Rio Grande cracked gasoline has the reputation in police circles of being the fastest, most efficient gasoline made. The police chiefs of Los Angeles, Oakland, Berkeley, or Maricopa County, Arizona, and many, many other cities and counties use Rio Grande cracked gasoline exclusively because it comes as close as possible to perfect performance. Yet it fits expense budgets. For the cost records of these cities show year after year that Rio Grande cracked gasoline delivers more miles as well as faster miles from every gallon. Every motorist can get this same gasoline that powers more police and emergency cars than any other brand from the independent Rio Grande dealer in your neighborhood. Ask for Rio Grande cracked and enjoy the thrill of police car performance in your car. Now our pleasure to present Mr. W. A. Huggins on the staff of Chief Sears of the San Diego Police Department. Mr. Huggins.
Every man who plots a holdup or some other crime invariably thinks he is smart enough to get away with it. He knows that in crimes committed in the past, the law has captured the criminals in practically every case, but always he is going to be the exception. We have confronted scores of lawbreakers captured by our police officers, and always they are baffled at the ease with which we tracked them down and blew up their alibis. They marvel at the apparent uncanny ability shown by the police in singling the right man out of the many who might have committed the crime. The secret of our success is simply that we take advantage of the mistakes every lawbreaker makes. Carefully as he plans his crime, there's always some detail he overlooks. Our job is simply to discover these mistakes and use common sense. There are always one or more clues to lead us to the criminals. The case you will now hear, for example, was carefully planned and daringly executed. But the holdup men made plenty of mistakes. They were not smart robbers. They were stupid. All criminals are stupid. The story that follows is proof that crime cannot pay.
Shortly after midnight, in the middle of May 1929, two shadowy figures stealthily work at the lock of the service entrance of a Ford agency in San Diego.
How are you coming?
None of these keys seem to fit.
That's funny.
Well, here's the last one. I'll try it. Nope. Hey, give me that hammer.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to bust this padlock open.
Oh, you nuts. You'll wake up the whole town.
Listen. We're getting in there, ain't we? And I don't care how we do it.
Yeah, but maybe somebody will hear us.
Well, if anybody comes snooping around, just get them. I'll take care of them. Go on, give me that hammer.
Well, all right. Here you are.
Swell. Here goes. That's more like it.
Did the business all right.
Sure, it did the business. That's the way to get things done. Force, my boy. There once was a mug that lived in the old days by the name of Alexander the Great. He found that out. When he couldn't untie a knot, he cut it with his sword.
Yeah? Well, let's drop the history lesson and get into this joint. Here, give me a hand on this door. Sure there's no watchman here?
I told you I cased the joint, didn't I?
Yeah.
Well, you heard me. There ain't no watchman.
Okay.
Hey, douse that flashlight, will you? You want to invite the whole world to this party?
But how can you see what you want?
The street light shines right through the showroom good enough, don't it?
You're going to take a new car?
Sure. Right off the floor.
Yeah, but that's taking a chance. They can spot a new car.
Not when we get through with it.
I think it'd be a better idea to take one of these into service.
Listen, dummy. They wouldn't be there if it was running good, would they?
No.
We've got to be sure we got a good car. Well, here we are. What looks good to you?
Well, how about that coupe over there?
I think you better take that roadster.
That's too flashy.
Well, we'll fix that. You see, we can drop the windshield on the roadster and shoot straight ahead. If we take a coupe, we'd have to take that windshield out, and that might attract attention.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, well, come on, hop in.
She got gas?
Careful with that light.
Yeah, she's quarter full. Let's have those Ford keys of yours.
Okay, here. Find one to fit?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, let's go.
Police scour San Diego for the stolen car. Cochran and Colson are working on it in the garage back of their bungalow. Finally, after 2 days of secret activity, they pridefully view the result of their labor.
That's a big difference from the shiny gray job we drove off the floor the other night, eh, Marty?
Yeah. Nobody could call it a professional paint job, but it's just what we want.
And that rotten black paint makes it look like any number of other heaps around the town.
Say, listen. Don't you think we better put some damp rags on the headlights and radiator so they'll rust?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Now, listen. The way I figure is this. That wide stretch of road along the National City Dyke is the best place to pull a job.
Yeah, there's not much traffic there. What time does the money car come through?
Well, it leaves Caliente in time to get to the bank in town here around noon. So it'll come along and, well, about 11:30. We'll knock over Monday, see, you know, when they're bringing in the tape for the weekend.
Figure we'll have much trouble with the Mex guard?
Nah, there's only two of them. They bring the dough over in a coupe.
They've never been knocked over before, have they?
Nah, that's why they're so careless, I guess. But if they get tough, why, we'll just bump them off.
Oh, gee, we don't have to do that, do we?
Might. What of it? Ain't $100,000 worth of beef?
Yeah, I guess so, but...
Remember that mug Alexander? He had the right idea. Cut right through the knot.
On the morning of May 20th, 1929, Nemesio Monroy and J.V. Barrigo, two Mexican police officers, call at the Agua Caliente Casino for the weekend receipts.
Well, here it is, boys.
How much dinero we take today, boss?
Almost $100,000. Madre de Dios.
$100,000? Whoa, whoa. Make a nice present for my woman to me, eh?
Yeah, so it would. But don't you go waltzing off with that dough, or I'll beat your ears in the messy.
Oh, do not worry.
By the way, how is your wife?
Oh, pretty good. It will not be long now before we have another little one.
Is that so? You're acquiring quite a family, Nemesio.
Oh, see, si, see. Si. Four already, all boys. And soon it will be five.
Nemesio is raising his own army for the next revolution. Well, you better get started with the dough, boys. Si, muy pronto.
Adios, senor.
Goodbye, boys.
Parked on a side street from which they can see far up the highway along the National City Dyke, Cochran and Colson await their victims. Ignorant of their peril, they are approaching, laughing and joking as they drive through Tijuana, bumping along the dirt road to the customs gate. They pass over the line, through San Isidro, and on into National City.
Hey, it's 11:30. Maybe we missed them.
Yeah, how could we? We've been here since 8 o'clock this morning.
But maybe they went the other way, through Chula Vista.
Hey, listen. I tell you, this is the route they take. You don't think I'd go into this thing before I checked every angle, do you?
Well, no.
Hey, that looks like them now.
Yeah?
See that big coupe coming down the road?
Yeah.
Yep, them's the boys. All right, kick that motor over.
Okay.
All right, pull over there and get in right behind them. Boy, oh boy, what a break this is, eh? Not another car in sight. Just like this. Keep that distance behind him while I turn this heater on him. There you are. That pulled him over all right.
Yeah.
Hey, just a minute. Just a minute.
What's the matter?
This tomcat's jammed. Wait till I clear it. Ah, darn it. All right, there it is. Okay, let's go. You take that side and I'll take this one. Come on now.
What is it? What do you men want from us?
All right, boys. Hand over that dough.
Caramba, what's the big idea of shooting at us?
Let him have it, Lee. Let him have it.
But, Marty.
Shut up. Let him have it, I say.
What's
the matter, Marty?
Oh, you darn fool. You didn't have to hit me, did you?
I'm sorry, Marty.
Well, it could have been worse. Oh, you only got me in the arm. There's the satchel. Come on, grab it.
Okay.
Now to duck these overalls and dark glasses and get me to a doctor.
Gee, Marty, it was a crying shame to bump off those poor devils.
Hey, what are you bawling about? You nearly murdered me, didn't you?
Oh, well, it wasn't necessary to kill those guys. They didn't have a chance.
You remember that mug Alexander the Great? He turned on the heat first and talked afterwards.
Detective Bureau, Sergeant Kelly speaking.
Yeah? Where?
On the National City Dyke.
Yeah?
Okay. Be right out.
What's up?
Murder, O'Connor. Come on. Now, did any of you people see this happen?
No, sir. That is, yes, sir. Yes.
Well, now, which do you mean?
Well, you see, me and my friend George, when we was over there in the dumps and we done hear the shooting.
Well, what did the men look like that did the shooting?
I couldn't exactly tell, mister.
What do you mean you couldn't tell? Didn't you see them?
Well, sir, I did, and again, I didn't know.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, sir, you see, when these here now bullets started whizzing around, why... George and me, we just naturally hid under some tin roof until it was all over.
Well, didn't you see anything?
Well, I done saw them drive away.
How many were there?
Well, the two. That's all I seen.
What were they dressed like?
Well, I don't take no particular notice. Seems like they had on these here now jumper things like the garage mechanic wear.
Anything else?
Well, sir, let me see now. If I just remember correctly, they had on them sunglasses.
Did you get their license number?
No, sir. I wasn't paying no notice to license number about that time.
Well, what kind of a car were they in?
Well, it seemed to me like it was an old Ford.
A Ford? What color?
Well, kind of dark, I guess. A black, maybe.
Anything else?
Well, I expect that's about all I know.
Anyone else see this happen?
Maybe your friend George saw something else.
George? Oh, no, sir. George, he didn't see nothing.
Oh, we want to talk to him. Where is he?
George? George, he's still hiding under that tin roofing over in the dump.
Meager are the clues the police have on which to work. Old black Fords are under suspicion, but finding the right one is as easy as finding the proverbial lost needle. Things look black for the police when help comes from an unexpected source.
Well, this is a tough one.
Yeah, it sure is.
Two guys dressed in jumpers and dark glasses in an old Ford. I'll find 100 people answering that description in a half an hour.
Yeah, and you won't be any closer to the right ones.
That's right. Detective Bureau, Sergeant Kelly speaking.
This is Inspector Hightower.
Yeah?
Well, I have some information that might be of assistance to you.
Yeah? What's that?
Well, a couple of men drove up near my house about noon today in an old Ford.
Yes?
Well, they met by another car which, well, it took them away. One of them seemed to be wounded. The Ford is still parked in the street.
What's the address, Mr. Hightower?
It's Martin B.
Thanks. We'll be right out. Now, what did these men look like, Mr. Hartell?
Well, they were both about 25 years old. One was around 5 feet, 5 inches tall, and the other one was maybe 2 inches taller.
How were they dressed?
Oh, had on some old clothes.
Could you identify them if you saw them again?
Absolutely.
Well, here's hoping you get a chance to.
Well, let's have a look at this car. Dealer's license. Is that number on your hot sheet, O'Connor?
Let's see. Yeah, that's the number of the car stolen from the Ford agency last week. But this is an old Ford. The one that was stolen was a new car.
Oh, just a minute. So this is a new car, too. Take a look at the position of the brake and gear shift. Well, this is a new car.
Painted over, huh?
Sure.
Hey, wait a minute. What's this?
What?
Something stuffed into the corner under the brake pedal. Well.
The jumpers and the dark glasses.
Well, what's that mean, hey?
That means this is the car the murderers used, Mr. Hartell.
Murder remains a mystery. Although Kelly and O'Connor have a slight description of the criminals, they have nothing definite to go on. But the fact that a machine gun was used starts them on an inquiry among underworld characters.
Well, Kelly, I got a lead.
You have?
What yeah, I found out that Ted Barnes has a submachine gun. Or at least, he did have one a week ago.
Ted Barnes? Oh, yes, he's that bootlegger up the line, isn't he?
Yeah, that's the guy.
But as I remember him, he doesn't fit the description of these mugs. He's about 6 feet tall and he's fat. The guys that did this job were both short. They were young fellas, too.
Sure, that's right. But Barnes might have lent them his machine gun, mightn't he?
Yeah?
Well, it won't hurt to go up there and look Barnes' joint over.
Okay, let's do that.
Armed with a search warrant, Kelly and O'Connor follow up this latest elusive clue. More than sure that it will end nowhere.
Mighty quiet around here.
I'll be prepared for anything. This Barnes is a bad egg.
Here comes somebody.
Well, what is it?
We want to see Ted.
He isn't here.
Where is he?
Out.
Well, we'll come in and wait for him.
You can't do that. I don't know when he'll be back.
We'll come in just the same.
Say, what's the big idea? Who are you?
We're police officers.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. See that?
That buzzer don't mean anything. This is a private house, and you can't come in without a warrant.
Well, we thought of that. Here's the warrant.
Oh. Well, I...
Come on, Kelly. Oh, I see you've got a hospital here.
What's that? Look, there's a guy in bed over there in the corner. Keep your hands off that gat, mister. I got you covered. Get that automatic out of his reach, Kelly.
Right. What's your name, pal? What's the matter with you? You won't talk, eh? Well, I'll take a look.
What's the matter with him, Kelly?
Bullet wound in his arm. This looks like our man.
Who is this guy?
I ain't saying nothing.
Well, you're Barnes' wife, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, where is he?
I don't know.
So he and this bird held up the money car, and he ducked out and left you to care for his pal, eh?
That's a lie.
Well, that's the way it looks to me.
Ted didn't have a thing to do with no holdup.
What about this man here? Who is he?
Let him tell you.
Did he hold up the money car?
I don't know nothing about it.
Well, we'll have to arrest you, too.
What for?
Well, we'll book your friend here on suspicion of murder, and we'll book you on...
You can't arrest me. I ain't done a thing.
Looks to me like you're an accessory after the fact. At least that's the way we're going to arrest you.
Hartell positively identifies the wounded man as one of the two he saw leave the Ford 2 days before. Police cover the town and discover the bungalow court in which an apartment was taken by Joseph Renané, who answers the wounded man's description. However, effects discovered in the apartment identify Renané as one Marty Colson, an ex-convict on parole, after serving part of a sentence on an arson charge committed in Los Angeles County. Papers in the apartment show that his partner is one Lee Cochran. Mrs. Barnes is the important link in the chain of suspects. Police question her closely.
Now, look here, Mrs. Barnes. We've got this case just about sewed up.
Yes, it isn't going to do you any good to hold out on us.
Listen, I don't know anything about it.
Now, that's not true, Mrs. Barnes.
It is true. I don't know a thing.
Now, we know that Ted wasn't in on this job.
What are you trying to do, trap me?
Why, of course not. You told us yourself he had nothing to do with it. And that's true, isn't it?
Sure it's true.
But Marty Colson, the man you were caring for in your house yesterday, he was on the job.
I don't know. How did you find out his name?
Oh, never mind.
And Lee Cochran, his pal, was the other bandit. We know that.
So, Marty Cochran, eh?
Looks like it.
Said he wouldn't open his mouth.
Now, look here, Mrs. Barnes. You're a woman. Did you know that one of those poor Mexican officers who was murdered the other day left a wife that was about to have a baby?
Is that the truth?
On the level.
Well, we know Ted didn't do the job, but we want to get Cochran. We want to see some sort of justice done. We can't give that poor Mexican woman back her husband, but at least we can make Cochran pay for the penalty of his crime. Now, if you were in that poor woman's place, and if Ted had been murdered, you'd want to see justice done, now, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I would.
All right. You can help us.
Well, we want Cochran. Where did he go?
Well, I think he went up to L.A. He and Ted. Oh, I mean he...
Oh, so Ted is with him, huh?
Listen, you said you wanted Cochran. I ain't talking about Ted. I got constitutional rights. You can't make me testify against my husband.
Furnished with a description of Cochran and Barnes, the sheriff's office of Los Angeles County takes the two men into custody within 24 hours. For more than 2 months, while they were awaiting trial and all through the courtroom proceedings, Colson refused to talk. He makes the communications that are necessary in writing. But from the moment of his arrest to the moment when he stands before the judge to receive his sentence, Silent Marty, as he has come to be called, has never uttered a word.
Martin Colson, Lee Cochran, you've heard the jury's verdict of guilty of murder in the first degree. Before I sentence you, have you anything to say?
Nothing to say.
I suppose it is useless to ask you, Martin Colson, if you want to break the silence you have obstinately maintained throughout the trial.
No, Judge. I have got something to say. Before you sentence me, I've got something important to say, Your Honor. I want to die. I want to pay my debt to society. Let Lee go, Judge. I'm the one you want. I planned the whole thing. Hang me, Judge, and let my partner go.
But Colson's magnanimous offer is refused. and he and Cochran are both sentenced to life imprisonment in Folsom Prison. Ted Barnes is sentenced to a year in the county jail as an accomplice after the fact. In Folsom, Martin Coulson retains his grim silence, only rarely talking to his fellow prisoners. His nickname of Silent Marty follows him behind the grim gray walls of the northern prison. Desperate, morbidly brooding, Coulson determines to beat the rat. For months, he works secretly on a crude diving apparatus, and then one day he attempts to escape through the powerhouse water intake pipe into the prison moat. But his apparatus fails to function, and he is dragged from the moat half-drowned. There is a hitch in solitary for his attempted break, but as soon as he's back in the cell block, he and his cellmate set about fashioning two pistols from the bits of metal they conceal in the machine shop. Then, on the morning of February 27, 1933, as the men are marching to their daily task,
what's the matter, Marty?
Oh, I'm sick. Oh. Hey, keep going there. What's holding up the line?
My pal here, sick.
Come on, don't go. Oh, quit prodding me, will you? Oh, on the up and up. I got cramps, something awful.
You better let me take him to the hospital.
Okay, Paul. Oh.
Work like a charm.
Yeah, but you better keep on looking, sick.
Now, you hold up the guard in the hospital.
Yeah.
And I'll make the operator call the warden down here.
Yeah.
If anybody gets fancy, bump them off.
You know what that means if they catch us?
Sure I do. But remember that mug, Alexander the Great, right through the knot.
Okay. Here we are. You all set?
Let's go.
What do you want?
Oh. My partner here, sick.
Oh. Come this way, then we'll...
All right, grab his gun. Okay. I'll get the operator.
Okay.
What are you...
Shut up, you. Don't ask no questions. Call the warden. And tell him to come down here right away. Tell him it's important.
But look here.
George, I tell you, will you? Or you're breathing your last this minute.
Oh, all right. Hello, warden. This is the hospital. Can you come down right away? One of the men is very sick. Yes, it's important. Please,
all right,
hurry.
That's enough. You don't have to cry over the telephone. Don't touch that board. It's hot, I say. Now get into that other room.
The warden comes?
Yeah. This guy here nearly tipped us off. But it's okay. The warden tried to call back. When he doesn't get an answer, he'll think that guy's awful sick and he'll be down on the double.
Good.
Then he'll listen to us. He'll hand over the keys and give us a safe conduct out of this hole.
Yeah.
He ain't got no guts. Wardens never have.
Nah.
It's strong guys like us.
Yeah.
Like that Alexander mug that gets places in this world.
Yeah.
You bet I'm telling you, pal.
Listen. What's that? The prison siren there. Why? Hey, where are you going?
They'll never get me.
Okay, you win.
Where's your father?
I guess he shot himself. He said you'd never get him. Gee, and he was a swell guy, too. Lots of education. Say, do any of you guys know who this mug Alexander is he was always talking about?
Thought he was smart enough to beat the law. He died a victim of his own stupidity. Any man who thinks he is smart enough to beat the law is mentally unbalanced. Common sense will convince any intelligent person that the forces of law and order are too strongly organized. Let tonight's story of criminal folly serve as a warning to any criminally minded listener that you can't get away with it. The time-worn old slogan is today truer than ever. Crime does not pay.
Thank you, Mr. Huggins.
The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.